Okay, so now let's look at a new methodology, which is the adaptive project framework. Now, APF or the adaptive project framework is a methodology, is again a type of agile framework. So, needless to say, two things. One was the waterfall model, and one was the agile model. Just to recap, agile model is the way in which things change and you incorporate the change. Again, as the name suggests, adaptive, right? So you adapt to the ever-changing business landscape. The adaptive project framework knows that even the best of the things can fail. The best of the lead projects may go haywire, and the fundamental thing that APF takes into account is that the change. The only thing that is constant is change, and that's what the APF methodology looks at. So the fundamental attribute of APF is that teams need to be able to adaptively respond to change. Unlike, say, the waterfall model where things are absolutely static in nature, if it's absolutely bound to change, things are very dynamic in nature, then APF is the project methodology to look at. Using the adaptive project framework methodology, teams must anticipate what are the risks involved, prepare for the unexpected in their project. Now, I know it's a difficult statement to make, but APF is actually meant for that. It takes into account, say, the most undue things that are supposed to happen. You need to ensure that these contingencies are recorded and are maintained as part of risks so that it helps to prepare for the unexpected. The key components of any project are constantly changing in flux, and that's where you must continuously reevaluate the results and the decisions with these moving parts in mind. As I mentioned, because APF focuses on change, right? It expects things to keep changing drastically, and that's where things might be in a constant state of flux, and that's where the framework focuses on continuously reevaluating the results. This requires a lot of communication with all the stakeholders, just like any other agile project. The ability to work collaboratively is equally important even in the APF methodology. So again, let's go to the same template. Where do you use APF and where should it not be used? If you know that the ultimate goal is the project deliverables, then this method is meant for you. If you know that things are going to change and you want to incorporate that change, then this particular framework is meant for you. It might not be the best of the cases to use the APF where you need where you want a lot of predictability. Things if are more constant, you don't involve the change, you don't involve the feedback loop. You don't foster a lot of collaborative behavior because the business objectives are set, the end objectives are well defined, and which are not meant for change. So, say, for example, in a regulated environment or say, in a statutory environment where things are not meant to change, that's where you might not need an APF framework. Things where which go absolutely change. So say, for example, and let me quote you an example where, say, a number of buying patterns change the way a sales of a product happens. So today, if, say, a particular trend is causing the higher sales, maybe it's a new release of a movie or a new style that has happened. So these things constantly change, correct? So if these things are taken into account, then a project framework like this might be more suitable. if you don't have the resources to handle the potential negatives of adaptability, because even adaptability takes a lot of toll, right? People need to be agile, people need to be nimble-footed, people need to incorporate that change, have that positive mindset, have to be self-motivated to bring about the change, because it requires a lot of rework, it requires a lot of scope change, it might be a lot of time wastage, etc., etc. So if there are limited resources to work on a particular project, or if you need, say, a predictable nature in which things are to be done, then this particular methodology is not meant. And now let us look at something called as a lean manufacturing, right? So lean methodology. Because this comes from manufacturing, I happen to say that it's lean manufacturing. So lean is another project management methodology that has its origin in manufacturing. And Toyota, the famous Japanese automobile manufacturer, used a lean manufacturing or used the lean methodology in the manufacturing techniques. It's all about applying the lean principles to the project management methods to maximize the value and to minimize the wastage. Now, these are two critical words. Lean focuses on minimizing the wastage. So once the wastage is minimized, that means you maximize the value. So there are two ways to maximize, right? Either you maximize the value by increasing your operational efficiency. That is point one. Or you reduce the wastage and then you increase the operational efficiency. So lean as a methodology focuses on reducing the wastage. Reducing the wastage and thereby increasing the value. So that's what lean is meant to do. Again, coming from a manufacturing domain, it has very strong roots as far as operational efficiencies are concerned. Toyota, as I mentioned and as you see on the screen, was a pioneer in developing this. And hence, this particular methodology is being now utilized in other areas as well. While this originally referred to reducing physical waste in case of manufacturing, it now refers to reducing, say, the wasteful practices in project management. And there are three wide principles here. So the three M's of lean manufacturing, and this is very critical. The three M's, and this you should remember. One is Muda, Mura, and Muri, right? These are the three M's of the lean methodology. Now let's look at all of these. First is Muda, or the wastefulness. So this, in terms of manufacturing, it's actually the wastage of, say, materials, raw materials, etc. In terms of the IT landscape, this refers to the resources. So maybe multiple resources added to the project without adding value to the customer. Say if there is over resource provisioning on a particular task or on one particular product or one particular phase of a project, which is Muda, which is wastefulness. Mura, on the other hand, is unevenness, which means you have overproduction in one area that throws all of your other areas out of action, leaving you with either too much inventory or inefficient processes. So which means, say you have five different processes or five different tasks in hand, but all your resources are put into only one particular process or only in one particular phase, which means there is uneven distribution of resources. The first, Muda, was inefficient provisioning of resources. The second, Mura, talks about uneven or non-distribution of resources for critical activities. If again, multiple different resources over-provision in one particular phase, which means the others are getting over-provisioned, and hence inefficiencies. The third principle here is Muri, which is basically overburdening. So if there is too much strain on one particular product line, and translating the same concept to IT, where there is heavy reliance of the resources or people, it can lead to breakdowns, right? So if say certain set of skilled resources are asked to work overtime, it could lead to things like burnout issues, and this is common both for machines as well as humans. Even machines from time to time need overhauling, right? You need to have planned maintenance, and there are phases where things are given a break. In a similar way, overburdening of critical resources or overburdening of any resources might lead to burnouts. And that's where the entire principle of Muri revolves around. So using these three principles, that is Muda, Mura, and Muri. One is wastefulness or over-provisioning. One is unevenness. And third is overburdening. You can reduce the types of wastage so as to have more efficient workflows. So that's the whole concept around lean methodology. So where should you use lean methodology? If you are looking at a set of principles that will help to, say, cut down waste and optimize the project flow. So if, as I said, if there is a plan in action to reduce the wastage and thereby maximize the value, then lean methodology is the way to go. If you are always trying to improve and add value to the customer, again, through operational efficiencies, through decreasing the wastage, through ensuring that the provisioning is adequate, then lean methodology is the way to go. And ultimately, removing the wastage also helps to decrease the cost. So that's the way where lean manufacturing should be used. This might not be the best place if you cannot afford to, run into troubles or afford any errors, because this inherently accounts for change. And while you are incorporating the change, while you are removing the wastage, there could be certain decisions where you would have taken which might not be right, and it could run into a potential error. Or you don't have a lot of budget to invest in, removing the wastage. I mean, let things happen the way they are. If there is no mindset to reduce the budget, and so reduce the budget is basically reducing the cost. So if there is no mindset or there is no budget to invest, so as to have the operational efficiencies, then lean manufacturing is not a place to be. Okay, let us now look at another methodology, which is critical path methodology. The critical path method is a way of identifying and scheduling all of the critical tasks that comprise the project, as well as list down their dependencies. The longest sequence of the critical task then become the critical path, which will define the time frame of the project. So the first thing to do here is identify all the critical tasks. Then schedule the tasks. Maybe there could be a lot of dependencies on each other. So unless a particular functionality gets developed in a project, the output of that particular functionality cannot be given to another module. Okay, given maybe I'll give you a better example. Say if there are a lot of demographic profiles involved, which means that users with a particular age, a particular gender, a particular location, etc., etc. And as per the software code, you have said that users of, say, Bangalore in the age group of 20 to 25 who are males who have studied engineering are more bound to buy, say, product A. So, this particular functionality you have calculated, say, in one particular module. You identify this as a critical task. Output of this module, so say the second module talks about what could be the sales of a product A, or what could be, say, some of the techniques used to increase sale of A. So you've derived the outcome of phase one, which is category A, and then you've used that as an input to category B. Right, so these are two dependent projects, both are critical. So what you've done is you've identified the critical resources, the critical tasks, and then you identified a critical path. So unless this particular phase gets completed, the second cannot start. And maybe there are multiple dependencies between these. So I've given a very rudimentary example. But in case of software development, there could be multiple different dependencies. So the longest sequence, so you create all of these. You first of all you identify these tasks, and then you create a chain of these tasks, and that becomes your critical path. Identify the essential tasks that you need to do to achieve the end objective. So this is a critical path methodology. Estimate how much time does each of these tasks will take, keeping in mind that certain tasks need to be completed before others can be started. So again, the point of dependency that I made. Maybe you have to finish one particular job before second can be started, right? So things can become can be in a sequential manner, or can also happen in parallel. So say for example, there is one job which may happen, say maybe 80%, and then there could be other job that could be that could happen in parallel, right? So the whole idea is that you list down these critical tasks, list them in a path, maybe sequentially, and then you calculate the output, and that gives you the project timelines. Use all of the information to schedule the critical path the project needs to take in order to get it done as quickly as possible without missing any crucial steps. The longest sequence of the critical tasks becomes the critical path, which will define the timelines of the project. Along this path, you will have milestones to meet. Obviously, as I mentioned, each project would have many different milestones. So there could be different milestones to meet that will signal once a set of task is over and you move on to the next task. There are multiple ways in which you visualize the critical path. Depending upon, say, the complexity, you could use multiple different methods or multiple different flow graphs. Or Gantt charts for that matter, because it's a path where you lay down different tasks, so it's better represented by a visual view. So using flow graphs, using flow diagrams, using Gantt charts, etc., the critical path methodology can be easily visualized. So again, when do you use this particular methodology? If it is a large scale and really complex, complex where it has a lot of interdependencies between the different tasks, the rudimentary example that I gave, maybe there are say 10 different things which have matrix correlation and interdependencies and correlations between each other. That's where getting a time frame becomes all the more complex in nature to arrive at. So that's a place where a critical path methodology can be easily used. If you're looking at a visual way to map out the sequence of tasks, so just like a Kanban where things were more simplistic in nature, where the processes are kind of easily laid out, but if it's really complex, then you need to use the critical path methodology. Again, this would give you a visual view, just like a Kanban board. But in this case, visualization would be in terms of, say, the Gantt charts, might be in terms of the flow graphs, etc., etc., to map out the sequence of the tasks. You need to identify the most important tasks so that, again, the critical path is that all the tasks which are placed in the critical path, resources, it helps you to better allocate the resources because you understand or you kind of separate your critical task from your non-critical task. And that's where you understand where you need to put in more resources. If you have a very strict plan and a very strict deadline, again, critical path is the way to go. Because it takes into account the, say, the optimization of the resources that need to happen basis the critical path that has been identified. Critical path methodology might not be the best place if you do not need to you do not need something which has a lot of complexities, or you are unsure of the timelines, the deadlines, or the duration. Because in this case, you kind of basis the deadlines, basis the durations, you identify which are the top activities, which are the top tasks that need to perform, and then you lay those tasks in a sequential manner, which gives you a critical path. Unless you are unsure of the timelines, then this particular entire approach falls apart. So just to sum up, critical path methodology, you identify the list of critical tasks, you place it sequentially in a particular path, and that forms the critical path. The project duration, the project timelines are calculated basis the critical path. Resource allocation can happen basis the critical tasks that are placed in the critical path. Let us now look at rapid application development methodology. Rapid application development, or RAD, is again a type of agile methodology that aims to foster faster development. As the name suggests, rapid application development. So just like extreme programming, which was meant for software, where you had a lot of feedback loops, output of one going into the input of other, a lot of improvements in the process. This methodology is also meant for software development. It uses rapid prototype release and iterations, so it's iterative process to gather user feedback in a short period of time. Again, I will actually come to the stage where this has to be used, but come to think of it, where there is a lot of say user interaction in place, things need to be more iterative in place. That's where RAD has to be used. It's driven by user feedback rather than strict project planning. In case if the requirements keep changing, where there is a lot of user feedback. So assuming that there is say a project around UI/UX, that is interface, how the interface looks like. So there's a lot of continuous feedback that keeps happening. So it's an ideal place where you should look at a rapid application development methodology. Some of the characteristics of RAD are reduced development time and speed up delivery, enhanced flexibility and adaptability. Because this takes into account a lot of user feedback, that's where it enhances flexibility. Better risk management. Now, why do I say so? Because there is a continuous user interaction, a continuous user feedback that keeps happening, and that's where it's better at managing the risks. Less of manual coding and short testing times, because you've taken into account the user feedback. That's where the testing can be a little minimal, and there is constant real-time user feedback that keeps happening. I mean, when you think of rapid application development, always think of user feedback. So, just like you had extreme programming, which was meant for software development, similarly, rapid application development meant for software. But in this case, the real-time user feedback is absolutely important. Important things to note: where should this project be used, or where should this methodology be used? If you want to be able to give your customers, your stakeholders, your clients a working model much more sooner. So it's obviously a work in progress, but then you incorporate a lot of user feedback. You want to create multiple prototypes and work with stakeholders to choose the best one. The example that they gave, right? If you want to create a front-end application or the front-end web page of how it looks like, so you might want to create multiple different prototypes. Say, if there is a prototype X that looks at, say, the way a screen is represented using certain fonts or using certain pictures as compared to another. So you develop these multiple prototypes and let the stakeholders choose the best one. Speed is of essence because you need to be really agile and create this in a fast way so that the end customer can choose the final products really quickly. And you want to encourage the code reuse. It might not be the best place to develop the rapid application development where you don't have an experienced team. Of course, if the team is absolutely new, then the time it will take for them to develop the first prototype might be really long, and that's where they might not be able to incorporate the user feedback so quickly, because this also talks about a shorter time duration, reduced time for testing. That's where an inexperienced team might not really help. Your clients or stakeholders do not have the time to commit for the project because there's a lot of user feedback, and if the customers or the clients are not in a position to give that feedback, then again, this is not the methodology to deploy. You have a large team. Again, large team might mean different expectations, so it's better that a RAD works with a small team, and you prefer to have a detailed specification for all project requirements. If everything is laid down, everything is communicated, business objectives, etc., are static in nature, and then there is no dynamic or changing things, then RAD is absolutely not the place to be. So, just to summarize, we looked at different project management methodologies. We started with the waterfall methodology, which is just like a waterfall. It's a traditional method of project management, which looks at tasks in a sequential manner. You start with requirement gathering, then analysis, design, construction, testing, and so on. So all the tasks happen sequentially. There is no room to change. If once a task is complete, once a step is complete, there is no room to revisit that task, and that's where it's absolutely static in nature. If things are meant to change, then waterfall is not the model to look at, and that's where we looked at agile methodology. Agile, which is, as the name suggests, it's more bound for change. It can incorporate that change, more flexible in nature. And we looked at different methodologies within the Agile framework, starting with Scrum. Scrum, the important thing to remember here was Scrum has sprints, And there is the role of a Scrum Master. So Scrum Master is different from the project manager, but you would have sprints which can last from 1 to 2 weeks. There could be daily stand-up meetings, there could be sprint meetings. The details are captured in a backlog, and if there is anything that needs to be changed, there is retrospective sprint. We then looked at Kanban. Kanban comes from the manufacturing industry, and the important thing here is to note here is the Kanban board, where you have the backlog, that is the to-do list, then you have the work in progress limits, then you have the validation, and you have the completion phase. You can pull in basis, one after the other, the tasks. And then we looked at areas where Scrum and Kanban can work together. It's called as Scrumban, where you use the best of Scrum and Kanban. You use the work in progress limits, where the teams can choose basis their capacity, the tasks. And you use the sprints from the Scrum methodology. We then looked at extreme programming, where there is a continuous change that keeps happening. So there's a lot of feedback loop. It's meant for software development. It was a software framework, and there are a lot of feedback loops in extreme programming. Then we looked at the adaptive project framework, where the thing to look at is change. And we looked at some 5 principles of APF, starting with simplicity and communication, feedback, etc. Then we looked at the lean methodology. Again, lean comes from manufacturing domain, which was used by Toyota. And the 3 principles here would be wastefulness, unevenness, and over-provisioning, overburdening. So these were the 3 things, Muda, Muri, and Mura. We then looked at critical path method. Again, you identify the critical items, the critical tasks. You place them sequentially, and then you have a critical path, which is used to calculate the project timelines, the project duration. And the last we looked at the rapid application development. Lots of interdependencies you look at rapid application development. Places where you use user feedback more often, you use rapid application development. So just to summarize, the right project methodology or the right project framework can elevate the project and help the project manager get the best out of each team. Whether you prefer agile methodology or you use the waterfall and say the critical methodology in the different industry, so it depends upon the use case, it depends upon the industry as we discussed, because no two projects are the same, so no two project methodologies can also be the same. You have to select which is the best for your particular use case, your particular set of segment, and your particular project. Ultimately, the best methodology is what makes sense, more suitable, depending upon the nature of the project, the team orientation, the kind of end customer, the organization. The role of the top management happens to be very critical. How, say, the users are more savvy to technology, the senior management is more forthcoming and gives a lot of feedback, suggestion, is a part of steering committee meetings, etc. And lastly, the project estimation models directly depend on the kind of project methodology used. Again, needless to say, all these methodologies are good, but it has an implication on the cost. So say the waterfall model, where everything gets documented at an early stage might come at a lower cost as compared to things like, say, some of the agile methodologies, like, say, a Scrum, where you need things like, where you need specialist people like Scrum Master, or maybe if I talk about, say, RAD, where there is continuous user feedback that comes in. So things could be more resource intensive. So again, the estimation of the project directly depends upon the kind of methodologies that are selected. Basis the cost, basis the timeline, basis the resources that are available, an informed decision can be made. So yes, with this, I'd like to sum up today's class. I hope you would have appreciated the different methodologies we looked at. More importantly, identify the key terms, say sprint meetings in case of Scrum, or the theory principles in lean manufacturing, etc. So I hope this has been informative, and I'd like to thank you for viewing.